Hi, this is Oren. If you find these teachings useful and you'd like to learn more about my work, you can visit me online at orenjsofer.com or on social media at orenjsofer. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks to everyone at CIMC for hosting this and bringing us all together this evening. Again, it's a real pleasure to be here with all of you. I want to start by just inviting you to share one word in the chat about how you're doing today. Just if you had to sum it all up in one word, the chat's open, just drop a word in there. Love to hear where everyone's at and invite you to take a look and see what's happening for folks. And I'll just read a few things out. Centered, sleepy, tender, anxious, tired, crabby, exhausted, tired, fluid, sleepy, open, content, relaxed, grateful, tired, frazzled, distracted, mixed, numb, tender, tired, overwhelmed, peaceful, curious, rough, tense, grateful, exhausted, scattered. Yeah. Whole range of things, right? And kind of clustering around centered, grateful, scattered, tired, exhausted. Yeah, so interesting times that we're living in. Really common, I think, for many of us to feel exhausted, to feel tired, to have a sense of fatigue. The last couple of years, I know, have felt a little bit like being pummeled for a lot of us, from the pandemic to everything happening in the political world, not just here in the US, around the world, the kind of extremism and polarization that's occurring, the economic uncertainty and inflation here in the US. Also here in the US, there's been ongoing gun violence, particularly the last 2 weeks, a number of mass shootings. So it's natural to feel tired, to feel worn down. And when we're tired, of course, the most natural thing to do is to rest. When we're tired physically, when we're tired emotionally. And I think because of everything we've been living through, there is this sort of collective need for rest, to rejuvenate, to handle the challenges and the crises that are ongoing in our world. So we talked about in the meditation that we just did in contemplative practice, how sort of returning to and cultivating a state of calm, of ease, of relaxation is an essential foundation for contemplative practice. It helps us to renew our spirit, to refresh our mind and body. It's a baseline for the development of deeper states of concentration and insight. And so the whole sort of realm of contemplative practice in many ways is supported by this essential factor of tranquility or calm, a certain quality of rest. And as I was pointing to in the meditation, it's not the whole picture, right? But it's one essential ingredient. If we can't rest, if we can't return to a place of non-doing, of ease and simplicity, it's very difficult to make progress in other areas, to look deeply into our experience, to cultivate insight, to develop other qualities. So it's really a foundation for our contemplative practice and an essential component of being a healthy human being, an engaged citizen, because if we can't rest, we burn out and we can't contribute. So this evening, I want to talk a little bit about what gets in the way of being able to rest? How do we engage with those obstacles? And hopefully offer some practical tips on cultivating a different relationship with doing and finding more rest in our lives. So I want to define rest. I want to start by just having a shared definition. Physiologically, mentally, emotionally, rest is defined as the ending or ceasing of some strenuous or stressful activity. It was the end of something that's taking a lot of energy. Another way of looking at rest is just a state of relaxation or even sleep that provides a kind of recharging or rejuvenation. And of course, there's like a whole range of reasons why it might be hard for us to rest, to find a rhythm of ceasing, of taking a break from strenuous activity, or of accessing this quality of relaxation and ease. There are many currents in our society and world today, I think, on a collective level, that make it harder to rest. So just the sheer pace and demands of modern life make it hard to disengage. Right? Every day we're bombarded with advertisements, the notifications through technology, just interfacing with our devices kind of tunes our whole nervous system to a certain state of tension and subtle anxiety. We are continually trained by the media and advertising and technology to seek relief from discomfort, not through rest, but through distraction and entertainment. So the sort of whole gestalt or zeitgeist of modern society is kind of being over-caffeinated and under-resourced. So this is the sea that we're swimming in, right? So one of the things I've been talking about on social media recently is, you know, how in a world that's addicted to busyness, distraction, accomplishment, actually disengaging and resting is a really radical act. So there's this whole aspect of the world today that I think makes it challenging or can make it challenging to rest. Then there's, of course, the sort of just practical and literal challenges of not having enough time, right? Whether you're raising a family, working two or three jobs, the kind of way the structures of our society, particularly here in the US, kind of have stripped away the social safety net, where there's this tremendous economic pressure on us as individuals that makes it harder to literally have the time and the resources to access downtime and rest. This is another aspect of our collective picture that can interfere with our capacity to access a kind of natural slowing down and resting. I think together with that, there's the dominant culture in the West has this intense focus on productivity. So we are kind of, I don't want to say brainwashed, you know, but we receive this continual messaging that rest is self-indulgent or lazy, and that the mark of a healthy individual is productivity. So there can be this underlying resistance to rest based on those messages that we receive. There's a wonderful cartoon by Michael Lunig. He has this whole world of these two cartoon characters that are corresponding with one another. One is named Vasco Pajama, a little play on the explorer of Vasco da Gama, and Mr. Curly. And so this is Vasco Pajama writing back, or Mr. Curly writing back to Vasco. In answer to your question about what is worth doing and what is worth having, so kind of a profound question, right? What is worth doing in life? What is worth having? In answer to your question about what's worth doing and what's worth having, I would like to simply answer that it is worth doing nothing and having a rest. So just notice the juxtaposition of that with all of the messages we receive every day about what's worth doing and what's worth having. So together with that, the dominant culture has this kind of way of equating our self-worth with accumulation and worldly success. So when we take that message in unconsciously, we can get caught in this cycle of continually seeking validation, belonging, approval, the sense of being okay or love by always doing more. And that makes it really hard to rest when our very sense of self-worth and our place in the world is dependent on what we can accomplish, how much we can do, how well we perform. It becomes very hard to give ourselves permission to disengage from that. So just as I go through this list of all these different factors that might make it challenging to rest, you know, listen and see which ones do you notice in yourself? Which ones light up as you hear them? Another area that I think can be very common that makes it hard for us to rest is a tendency to want to avoid unpleasant emotions or painful experiences. If we were to slow down and rest, we might have to feel what's there. So there's a way we can get in the habit of keeping busy, always doing things to avoid feeling the grief, the pain of our personal losses or our collective losses. So this too can make it challenging to rest. And for me, in my personal life, my coping mechanism was keeping busy. So I've talked a little bit in different places, often on retreats, about growing up with a mentally ill family member. And when that first arose in my childhood, I was about 9 or 10. And my way of dealing with the sort of emotional chaos and intensity of what was happening in my family was to get really focused. So to keep busy with school. At the time, I was really interested in drama and acting. So I put a lot of energy into acting and going to auditions. And that was my way of avoiding what I was feeling because it was too overwhelming. And what was interesting was that those personal factors fed right into my social conditioning. So all of the messaging that I received as a young white Jewish male was to achieve, to excel, to do more. So I was getting this continual mirroring and encouragement from the world around me, my family, my school, our synagogue, that my value as a human being was through what I could do, my performance, how well I did in school, the number of clubs I was in. And so the personal aspects of my family and the social aspects fed on one another to this very deeply rooted habit of keeping busy to avoid feeling what was happening. And so today, you know, some 35 years later, having done a lot of meditation and therapy and trauma healing and had, you know, the opportunity to actually have access to those kinds of healing experiences, I've worked through a lot of the trauma, a lot of the emotions. But what's interesting is that even though I've resolved a lot of the emotional pain from that time, the loss, the grief, the anger, that habit energy is still there. That patterning of staying busy is so strong that if I'm not conscious, if I'm not attentive, it can take over. So there's a need for me in my own life, my own practice, to sort of consciously check that momentum of always moving on to the next thing, staying busy, keeping engaged, and actually setting aside time, not just for spiritual practice, but to not do anything, to go take a walk, to just enjoy the weather, to play with my cat, to do things that are nourishing and restful. So how do we step outside of the frenzy of activity? whatever the factors are for each of us that may be feeding that personal or social, how do we reclaim our innate need to rest? And how do we deal with some of the challenges and pressures that might get in the way of that, some of which are very real and concrete, that are not just, say, emotional or psychological? I think for me, one of the key places to start is really getting clear about what rest isn't, and challenging some of the ideas or notions we may have internalized from our family, our culture, the media, or religious messaging. So rest isn't about being self-indulgent or lazy. It's not about collapsing or always choosing what's easy. It's about finding balance. It's about learning to honor our natural limits. I believe that part of what makes us human is that we have a deep need to contribute to life, to contribute to others, to find a sense of meaning and purpose. And in today's world, there is no shortage of opportunities to help and contribute. But of course, we need to balance that energy that's going out with allowing energy to come in, with receiving and resting. Otherwise, we burn out and we grow resentful. One of my favorite quotes from the Christian mystic Thomas Merton: there's a pervasive form of contemporary violence to which the idealist fighting for peace by nonviolent methods most easily succumbs: activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. More than that, it is cooperation in violence. The frenzy of the activist neutralizes one's work for peace. It destroys one's own inner capacity for peace. There's so many urgent problems in our world, whether we're looking at the intersection of racial justice and climate justice, whether we're looking at reproductive rights, gun control, economic inequality. It's easy to feel pulled in all directions and to feel like everything is urgent. And yet our capacity to really contribute and to embody the kind of transformation and peace and equity and love and belonging that we might envision for our world, we lose that. It becomes destroyed inside if we don't allow ourselves to rest. If we don't find this balance of outgoing energy and incoming energy. So reclaiming our need for rest starts, I think, by recognizing the value and the need for rest, and returning to the sense that it's the most natural thing in the world. Everything in nature operates through cycles of activity and rest. Right? The day and the night, the seasons, the phases of the moon and the tides. We look at our own body and mind, and we see we breathe in, we breathe out, we receive, and we give. There's a famous Zen saying, chop wood and carry water. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. It's the most natural thing to do in the world for our creature body to rest when we're tired. So we're trying to reclaim something that is innate, that we have become disconnected from, that we've learned through the unnatural pace of modern society to override, having lights on in the evening, looking at screens and TVs late into the night, pushing through our tiredness, and I have to answer another 10 emails, not taking breaks for meals, sitting too long, not standing up when our body wants to. We've become numb oftentimes to the signals for the need for rest and movement and play. So it's not so much needing to create something new, but actually starting to awaken the sensitivities that are there already in our body, and learning to honor those, learning to come back into balance with those natural rhythms. Some of that, of course, is about questioning the messages and the assumptions that we've internalized from the dominant society and culture, and starting to reclaim our own sense of innate value and dignity and self-worth, so that our work, our service, our contributions in the world aren't coming from this kind of codependent place of seeking approval or love or belonging. Like, if I just did enough, finally, I would be okay. They'll see me, they'll love me. Right? And this is one of the developments of contemplative practice, through loving kindness, through gratitude, through the simplicity of just being, rediscovering an innate sense of wholeness, that we're enough just as we are, just by being born, just by making it onto the planet. Each creature has a certain kind of dignity and sovereignty and belonging, being intimately connected to everything. The more we start to touch into that sense of innate wholeness, then our work, our service, our volunteering, our contributions to our family, our community, even taking care of ourselves, can start to come not from needing something back, but from a deep and innate desire to contribute, from a natural movement of generosity and compassion in the heart to help. So this is one sort of trajectory, or a few that I've touched on, the sense of resensitizing our body to our need for rest, reclaiming our own sense of wholeness and belonging, so that our work and engagement can be more balanced. And then the invitation to really give ourselves permission to rest. What would it be like to allow yourself to rest? And so, of course, this starts with sort of the most fundamental physiological level of eating well, getting enough exercise and sleep. And then that starts to translate into the psychological and emotional realms. What would it be like to not have to make every single moment of the day productive? To not always need to have a purpose or be working on something, as we were exploring in the meditation, to just allow ourselves to do nothing. So in contemplative practice, as we explored in the meditation, this is often one of the first capacities to develop, is the skill to just be still and quiet without trying to get something or accomplish something. Rediscovering our value for being in and of itself rather than doing. That then becomes a foundation that eventually becomes integrated and balanced with wholehearted effort. So it's not that there isn't something to do in spiritual practice. Freeing the heart and the mind actually takes a lot of work, a lot of energy, but it's balanced energy. It's not a kind of pushing or straining or forcing. So we have to unlearn that habit first and reclaim this sense of ease, a kind of wholeness and dignity of just being. And then from that place of wholeness, engaging in a more sustainable and wholehearted effort. As I was thinking about our session today and doing some writing, I think Nicholas mentioned I'm working on a new book, and it's a collection of reflections on different qualities. And so one of the chapters is on rest. I was reflecting on the word rest, and that a rest in musical notation is an interval of silence. It's actually, you know, in musical notation, there's a rest, and it's this pause for a specific amount of time between the music, between the notes. And it's a lovely metaphor for how we can start to access rest in our days. Can we integrate periods of silence, of non-doing, into the rhythm of our day, into the rhythm of our week, into the rhythm of our life? So in nature, we see this, as I referred to earlier, in agriculture, right? A field needs to rest periodically. Right? You let the land be fallow for a season in order for the nutrients in the soil to regenerate. So this rhythm, this balance of activity and rest, it's enshrined in the Abrahamic religious traditions and Judaism, and then Islam and Christianity after, through the Sabbath. So in Hebrew, the word Shabbat comes from the root shevet, which literally means to sit or to rest. And in the Jewish tradition, the Sabbath, the Shabbat, is not only a period of rest, but it's also a doorway. It's also kind of like a portal to the mystical realm, from the world of doing to the world of being. This is a quote from Abraham Joshua Heschel's wonderful book on the Sabbath. He writes, 6 days a week, we live under the tyranny of things of space. On the Sabbath, we try to become attuned to holiness in time. We are called upon to share in what is eternal in time, to turn from the results of creation to the mystery of creation, from the world of creation to the creation of the world. On Shabbat, we stop and turn to care for the seed of eternity planted in the soul. It's beautiful, isn't it? So for more than 5,000 years in the Jewish tradition, one day a week is devoted to rest and to that shift in attention that we practice in the Dharma, from the world of doing to the world of being, from the objects and activities of the world to the origin of that in the heart and the mind. So can we begin to attune ourselves to these cycles of activity and rest, to start to track this natural rhythm of things in our day-to-day life? So notice, when you finish a task, what happens next? Do you, boom, rush off to the next thing after you finish doing the dishes or eating a meal or folding the laundry? Is the mind already one step ahead, tumbling forward into the next thing? Or is there the capacity to allow the completion of that activity? It's like, ah, the dishes are done. And to just land there for a moment, to appreciate the completion of that outflow of energy and rest. It doesn't need to be a long rest, just enough time for your nervous system to actually receive the nourishment of that sense of completion. So we can pause for a moment, breathe, appreciate what's been completed. So this is one way to start to integrate rest into our day, into our life, without needing to have lots and lots of time. After you send an email, just let there be a moment. That's done. Notice the ending of the task and allow that to really register in your heart. So let's explore this some more. Let's explore what are some ways to integrate rest, to have and find rest in our life. So we've talked about the kind of the foundation of just taking care of our body, right? Eating well, exercising, getting enough sleep. Talked about contemplative practice as starting from this foundation of cultivating rest, of non-doing, simplifying. We talked about the rhythm of activity and rest in the course of a day. We can start to look at that also in larger arcs. So of course, there's the tradition of literally having a Sabbath. Some of my colleagues I know will maybe take, doesn't need to be on the Sabbath. So just having a period of your week, whether it's a whole day, a half a day, where you're not doing. So I know many people enjoy having, practicing a technology fast. So not engaging with devices for a period of 24 hours or half a day as a way of returning to the natural rhythms of things, coming back into sense of orientation, connection with nature. In Dharma communities, it's very common to, if the circumstances of our life allow it, going on a retreat once a year, whether it's for a weekend, for a week, or sometimes longer. But looking at a larger arc of time, whether it's a month, a year, and seeing where are there periods where we can disengage from the churn and actually give our mind and body a period of downtime. I know that sleep is often a challenge for many people in our world today. I myself have had insomnia on and off for many years for different reasons, sometimes medical, sometimes more kind of emotional, psychological. Happen to be in a good phase right now, or I'm sleeping like a champ, which is going to change shortly. Some of you who we practice together regularly know my wife and I are expecting a child in the fall. So I'm expecting to not have much sleep for a period of time. So I'm kind of banking as much as I can right now. But if you do have trouble sleeping, if you're kind of the need for rest is on that sort of very primary physiological level, there are things we can do to support that. And I wanted to just touch into that a little bit. So one of the most fundamental things to start to look at with sleep disturbance, of course, there's a need to look at it medically and physiologically, and I'm not qualified to speak to that, but just checking to make sure that you don't have any, you know, nutrient deficiencies and that you're pituitary gland and the HPA axis are all functioning properly. All of that's really important if there's sleep disturbance, just checking things out medically. On a more sort of spiritual, psychological, emotional level, look at how you're using your mind during the day. What's the quality of your attention during the day? You know, are we kind of continually getting dosed with cortisol and running on agitation, worry, anxiety? Are we moving through the day with a certain quality of rushing or straining? If so, those habit energies, including the literal hormones that are coursing through our body, are going to carry over into the night. So one of the primary ways is to start to have deeper rest, more quality rest at night, is to start to look at how can we have more balanced effort and energy during the day. Not necessarily needing to do less, although that can help if we have the option to do that, but looking at our relationship with how we are doing activities. So to see, can we bring a more even and steady kind of energy and attention to activities? And some of that is about this kind of cycle that I was talking about before, right? Of allowing things to end, noticing those pauses and gaps between things. But it also involves how we are engaging in an activity. So in preparing for parenthood, I've been starting to bring a lot more attention to things like how I do the dishes, how I fold the laundry. Like, there's going to be a lot more of that. Because what I notice in myself is if I'm not paying attention, doing something like cleaning the kitchen, doing dishes after a meal, the default is for that to be get through it as quickly as possible to get to the next thing, right? So what happens when that activity becomes an opportunity for presence and ease? So just doing the dishes, just giving wholehearted attention there. It doesn't necessarily mean slowing down the pace, but it means disengaging a certain quality of tension. So when we're rushing, when we're trying to get through something as quickly as possible to get to the next thing, pay attention to how that feels in your body. For me, there's a quality of tension and a certain kind of tumbling forward. I'm not actually fully seated in this moment because I'm trying to get to the next moment. And that's exhausting. That's draining. So one of the things we can learn to do through our spiritual practice is how to be fully engaged, but deeply present and centered. So I can move quickly. I can be washing the dishes with a lot of focus and efficiency, but not be rushing, not be straining. And then the activity can actually start to become nourishing, because in doing it in that way, I'm practicing a certain kind of wholeheartedness and presence. All of my attention is there with the dishes, with the water, with the movement. So coming back to sleep, if we're able to bring this kind of single-minded, wholehearted attention to whatever the tasks of our day are, when we come to the end of the day, our mind isn't scattered and pulled in a million directions. We're not still tumbling forward because we've been practicing all day just being here, just attending to what's in front of me, which doesn't necessarily mean going slowly. We can still be very efficient and effective in moving quickly, but we're doing it with a kind of cohesion of mind and body. So this is a really essential skill to develop that can benefit our sleep as well as a lot of other things. And then, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't also mention, while we're on sleep and rest, things like having good sleep hygiene, right? So I'm sure all of you know this already, but it's just to be sure to include it, of having a period of time to wind down at the end of the evening, not looking at screens for at least an hour before bed, giving yourself time to put things down so that when we do go to sleep, there's been a sort of a buffer between the day and sleep. So another challenge with finding enough rest that I referred to earlier is literally not having enough time. So whether it's work, parenthood, economic pressure, sometimes the day is too full, the week is too full. And whether it's not having periods during our day or week for downtime, or literally finding the number of hours we have to sleep getting shaved off at either end because of the number of responsibilities and commitments we have in our life. There's still ways to integrate rest into our day. So short moments. So being able to find between things, just a moment to breathe. Just a moment to notice the quality of light coming through the window. You know, when you're drinking liquids and eating, giving yourself at least a few moments of that period to really be present. Right? So again, I'm wanting to acknowledge the reality of some of our lives, hopefully not all the time, but I think we all go through periods where, you know, we're working and eating at the same time, right? If you're on a deadline, you're juggling a lot, right? You're multitasking. So if that's the reality, and I think it's worth taking the time to really check, is that the reality? Like, how much are we operating on habit or forcing ourselves to meet unrealistic expectations? I know for myself, a lot of the time when I think that's what's happening, it's not, it's self-imposed, right? I've taken on more than I need to. I could, for example, you know, reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm not going to get that to you on time. It's going to be next Monday. Right? Or I'm doing things to a standard that others aren't necessarily holding me to, that I'm holding myself to. Right? And if I were to dial that standard back a little bit, all of a sudden I have more time. So as I start to talk about some of these other strategies for finding rest when we are really busy and don't have time, I want to make sure I'm also acknowledging or really encouraging all of us to check and see how much of that sense of being busy and not having time is real and how much of it is self-imposed. And are there areas where we have choice, where we can dial things back, where we can let go of something, where we can lower our expectations or standards in order to have more balance? Yeah. So in the times where that's not possible, we're on a deadline, we're not willing to make those sacrifices, what are the ways that we can integrate short moments of presence and rest? So I was talking about meals. So if you're going to multitask and do work during a meal, give yourself at least the first 3 bites or 5 bites to just be present with the food, right? To just enjoy the taste. When you're drinking water or coffee or tea, give yourself that nourishment of being fully present for at least the beginning of it. So as you find small ways to have moments of presence during your day, brushing your teeth, going to the bathroom, drinking a glass of water, getting up from your desk if you have a desk job and stretching for 30 seconds or a minute, punctuating the day with these brief moments of connection and presence can be deeply restful. It can be enough to break up any strain and intensity of the work so that when you get to the end of the day, you're not just destroyed, right? From this kind of perpetual nonstop pressure all day long. this takes discipline. It takes a certain commitment to acknowledging and recognizing the pattern that's in place and a desire to shift it. It takes mindfulness, because we have to remember to integrate these pauses, to find those moments. And I think it takes a certain kind of tenderness and relationship of love with ourself. Going back to that Thomas Merton quote, there's this kind of violence we do to ourselves when we override again and again and again our limits and our needs. And so one of the antidotes to that that I've found in my own practice is cultivating a relationship with my own heart and my own body of love and tenderness, where I'm not willing to override anymore. You know, just like you wouldn't force a friend to keep pushing past a certain point just out of compassion, the more we can cultivate a relationship of tenderness and love with ourself, the harder it becomes to keep overriding those signals. So the last area I want to talk about is burnout. Sometimes it's hard to rest because we're so tired. It's kind of ironic, but when there's this kind of very deep exhaustion, it can feel, one of the things that can happen is we don't allow ourselves to rest because we're afraid that if we do, we'll kind of collapse and never get up again. The other thing that can happen is we allow ourselves to rest, but we're unable to because we're so exhausted. It's like we've kind of passed some threshold and the well just isn't filling up anymore. So this is challenging. You know, when, and these are signs of burnout. These are signs of a kind of a level of exhaustion that is from repeated or chronic stress. So many healthcare workers through the pandemic, parents who have been, you know, dealing with kids at home through the pandemic and working at home, frontline workers, very, very common to have this kind of burnout. So sometimes we just need more time. The body will begin to recuperate and recover, but it needs more space and time. Sometimes there's a certain kind of like input of nourishment that's needed. You know, it's like when the ground is really, really dry, if there's a strong rain, the water actually doesn't soak in. It just runs off because the soil is too hard. And so what's needed is this kind of like a light rain first to just slowly start to seep into the soil, for the soil to start to regain its capacity to absorb and hold moisture. And so it's like that with our heart and our body sometimes when we're so bone tired and exhausted, we can't actually take in the nourishment of rest. We might need more like shorter periods. So to actually have activity and to just have a little bit of downtime, or to start to consciously introduce things that are soothing, that are nourishing for us, and finding what is that for you, whether it's music or art or good conversation or comfort food, But what is that for you? That's the equivalent of that very gentle light rain that just starts to be able to penetrate the soil and soak in, so that that capacity to receive and hold moisture starts to open up again. Another tool for working with this kind of burnout and deep exhaustion is using the nervous system to working with the nervous system to start to reawaken the cycles, the natural cycles of activity and rest, right? So when our nervous system is functioning in a healthy way, there's this up and down. We breathe in and we breathe out. We have a period of work and then we rest. We're busy during the day and then we sleep at night, right? That's a very kind of natural cycle of our nervous system. It's how the body, human body and mammals are designed. So when that gets dysregulated from trauma, from burnout, we need to reacquaint the nervous system with that rhythm. One of the analogies I like to use for those who live in colder climates, whether it's on the East Coast or other parts of the world, is if your car gets stuck in the snow and you just put the, you just give it gas, your wheels are going to spin. You're not going to go anywhere, right? So those of us who drive in snow know, what do you have to do? You have to give a little gas and then you take your foot off the gas, and you give a little more gas and you take your foot off the gas. You kind of have to rock the car out of the rut. And so the same thing can be true for our nervous system when we're deeply exhausted. We have to kind of rock ourselves out of that state. So what does that mean? Finding a way to bring rhythm in. And so it depends on where you're starting from. If you're starting from a state of collapse where you're just flat out exhausted, can't get out of bed, can't do anything, just like wiggle your toes. You know, wiggle your toes and your fingers and then rest. And then kind of like wiggle your toes and your ankles again and then rest. So just where can you bring in a little bit of rhythm? Or have a short conversation with someone and then rest. And then have another little conversation and then rest. That back and forth can start to reawaken the natural ability of the body to have energy and rest. If you're starting from the other side where you're in that kind of like running on fumes, can't slow down, too tired to rest, too tired to stop. Give yourself, start to introduce a little bit of rest here and there. Just close your eyes for one breath and then go back to the busyness or what's happening. You know, give yourself 2 minutes to stare out the window and then come back to the busyness. So you get the idea of introducing something different to start to have what's called in trauma healing, this pendulation, this back and forth, to reintroduce the cycle and almost like jumpstart the capacity again to have a deeper quality of rest. So the more we can do this, it starts to reawaken something. When we are able to access rest and downtime, it's a precursor for joy, for creativity, for vitality. Think about how it feels when you've had a good night's sleep, right? Out of a state of rest comes renewed energy, vitality, a capacity for delight. And that start, and in spiritual practice, it starts to open the heart and consciousness for insight, new perspectives, ways of experiencing the world, other ways of being. So this is essential for us as human beings to thrive in our world. So that was the bulk of what I wanted to share tonight. I hope it's been useful. Anything that isn't helpful, just leave it aside. And what speaks to you, please take it and integrate it. So let's just end with a moment of quiet together and offer the goodness of our time to one another and all those who are in need right now. So So just inviting you to sit quietly, to turn your attention inwards for a moment, feel your heart, appreciating one another in this period of exploration, learning. May any benefits, insight, healing from our time together be in the service of the safety, the freedom, and the liberation of all creatures everywhere. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care of yourself, honor your need for rest, and hope to see you again. Thanks so much.